If you've had to have radiation treatment for breast cancer, are you at risk for heart disease?
How often is colonoscopy inappropriately done in older individuals?
Should we be checking circulating DNA in order to see the extent of disease in breast cancer?
And what can your mummy teach you about atherosclerosis?
Oh, all right, I'm calling you the pun master. That's what we'll be talking about this week. That's the week of March 22nd, 2013 on PodMed, the weekly look at the medical headlines from Johns Hopkins. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Rick Lang, professor of medicine at Johns Hopkins and vice chairman of medicine at the University of Texas Health Science Center in San Antonio.
And Rick, as I suggested, you're the pun master, so we have to start with the one that got the laugh out of me. That's from a study in The Lancet, taking a look at atherosclerosis in mummies.
This was a fascinating study, kind of an anthropologic study in a medical journal. Atherosclerosis is actually thought to be a disease of modern human beings. However, we really don't know whether it preceded McDonald's. So this was a study where they did CT scans of 137 mummies that spanned a time frame of about 4,000 years. These were mummies from either ancient Egypt or ancient Peru, or for the ancestral Pueblo Indians in Southwest America, or in the Yunangan Indians of the Aleutian Islands outside of Alaska. These mummies all were completely imaged, and they asked a simple question. Could they find atherosclerosis? They assessed the presence of calcium in the arteries, and we know that calcium is one of the very early signs that there's damage of the blood vessels. And what they discovered was that there was probable or definite atherosclerosis in about a third of the 137 mummies, 38% of the Egyptians, 25% of the Peruvians, 40% of the Pueblo Indians, and 60% of the Yunangan hunter-gatherers. So this tells us that atherosclerosis was in fact common in four pre-industrial populations. So it doesn't appear to be a modern disease after all.
And one of the things I think is just so fascinating about this study is that all four of these populations clearly had very different diets. When we've discerned that there was atherosclerosis among the Egyptian population in the past, among the mummies, the speculation was, hey, these guys who were mummified were all these gluttons and they were pampered and spoiled and they had this really fat-laden diet. And that turns out to not really be the case. So I think that's really a fascinating thing. The other thing that I think is fascinating is that a lot of these mummies, all of them are preserved by different methods. So we can't factor back to, hey, maybe it's an artifact of preservation. It must clearly exist because these are such disparate populations.
You're right, Elizabeth. The diets are very different. The regions are very different. But it's clear that they have atherosclerosis. Some of these populations actually cooked indoors. And we know that they also had soot-stained lungs as well. In these populations, the incidence of infection was very high. And so inflammation may have played a much more prominent role then, pre-antibiotics, than it does in the current era. What's clear is that it preceded fast food, a sedentary lifestyle. It was present in mummy.
On the other hand, I'm also going to conclude that you are not advocating for sedentary lifestyle, cigarette smoking, and a fat-laden diet in order to avoid heart disease.
Or mummification.
All right. Enough of that one. Since we're talking about heart disease, let's move to the New England Journal of Medicine. A look at heart disease following radiotherapy for breast cancer.
In 2012, there were an estimated 3 million survivors of breast cancer in the United States alone. And that's because we have effective treatment strategies. So what's happened is we've taken a group of women that have a disease and made them survivors of the disease. They subsequently suffer other things. And one of the things that they may suffer is complications related to the treatment of it. In this particular case, treatment related to radiation therapy. This was an excellent study that looked at the risk of ischemic heart disease in women after radiation therapy for breast cancer. It looked at the incidence of major heart events, things like heart attacks, death from ischemic heart disease, or did they need to have a bypass surgery or stenting. In over 2,000 women who underwent radiotherapy for breast cancer between 1958 and 2001. When women were exposed to radiation, there was a dose-related increase in the risk of heart disease. It started within 5 years after radiation therapy was administered, and it continued for the next 20 years. Women with pre-existing cardiac disease have the highest risk.
Clearly, the survivorship from cancer is a success story, and it speaks to our ability to find it, to treat it, and to manage people. as we both know, one of the emerging issues is this issue of sequelae. What happens after you're treated for cancer? What are you at increased risk for? And how can we get you to really engage in your subsequent health in a way that's going to make sure that these particular consequences can be ameliorated?
And we've known for a number of years that the administration of certain chemotherapy agents can lead to heart disease on down the road. This is major input regarding the use of radiation therapy. So this has actually spawned a whole new subspecialty, what's called cardio-oncology now. We need to begin to aggressively modifying risk factors very early on in these women.
There's nothing unique, though, about the issue of breast cancer. We can sometimes see these cardiotoxicities or problems down the road in other forms of cancer subsequent to therapy, too.
Any radiation that's given for any type of cancer in which the heart's involved, particularly therapy that involves the left side of the heart, increases the risk. And the important thing about here is it's dose-related. The more radiation, the higher the risk.
Okay, let's stick with the New England Journal of Medicine then and take a look also in breast cancer at this issue of monitoring circulating DNA to see about metastasis.
This is what's called a proof of concept study. Since breast cancer is the most common cancer and the leading cause of cancer-related death in women worldwide, we'd like to make it curable, but subsequently monitoring it as well to see if it recurs. And one of the things we like to use is what are called biomarkers. There are particular antigens or proteins that can be found in certain women that have breast cancer. But the current biomarkers we have are only 60 to 70% sensitive in detecting this. One of the newer techniques is to use circulating cells, whether there are cancer cells that we can detect that clue us in. But again, that sensitivity is only about 65%. So what these authors did was they did something that was novel. They used different DNA sequencing techniques, two different ones, that identified abnormal DNA sequences. And they designed personalized assays for these women. And using this technique, they were able to detect circulating tumor DNA in 29 of the 30 women. The circulating tumor DNA showed a greater dynamic range for detecting disease and also a greater correlation with the size of the tumor. So this is a very interesting, what I'm going to call proof of concept analysis.
And I would have to say also, I'm not terribly surprised by this. I also wonder if over the long haul, we're not going to be able to develop very personalized markers based on excision of somebody's tumor, for example, that may be able to discern the presence of these cells sometime down the road after treatment.
And being able to target certain pathways is very appealing. You know, I think the whole treatment of cancer over the next 5 and 10 years, both the treatment and the surveillance, is going to change dramatically.
Outstanding. This is a good news study. I like these. Finally, let's turn to JAMA Internal Medicine, a look at inappropriate screening colonoscopy in older people.
And the reason why they looked at this was because current recommendations for the U.S. PSTF are that individuals don't get screened after the age of 75. And once you had negative screening, that the next colonoscopy not be done for 10 years. What the investigators did in this study was they looked at 100% of the Medicare claims data in Texas from 2000 to 2009, and they had a correlative 5% sample just from across the United States. And they asked a simple question, how often did the colonoscopy appear to be inappropriate? The way they determined it's inappropriate was they said, well, gosh, did the patient have a diagnosis beforehand that suggested they needed it? If they had no diagnosis suggesting they needed it, then that was potentially inappropriate. Or if it had been done in a screening mode, but done in a shorter period than 10 years, then it was potentially inappropriate. And what they discovered was that about 1/4, specifically 23% of screening colonoscopies in the Medicare population were inappropriate.
For older people, of course, I'm going to interpret this as good news because being able to give colonoscopy a miss is a wonderful thing. I would also say the penetration of recommendations, specifically those from the American Cancer Society, to somebody's practice sometimes takes a dauntingly long time as far as I'm concerned. So the idea that if you've had a negative screening colonoscopy and you don't need another one for 10 years. When I talk about that at cocktail parties, which I do all the time, of course, I don't really get much awareness of that fact coming back.
Yeah, but I can't say that I've spoken about this at a cocktail party recently, but I would agree with you. for individuals who have been in practice a longer period of time, they may not be aware of the newer recommendation. In fact, when they looked at the colonoscopists who had the highest percentage of potentially inappropriate screening procedures, it was more likely to occur in medical school graduates before 1990. Other times, it's because they simply don't believe them, despite the fact they're supposed to be evidence-based.
And, of course, that's what we call that anecdotal evidence.
I call the DAM studies. Doesn't apply to me. What we try to do, Elizabeth, you and I try to do, is disseminate the latest information to make sure that our recommendations are based upon the current evidence.
Yeah.
And, Elizabeth, I know which one you're going to put on the blog. I'm sure you're going to put the mummy article, and I think our listeners will enjoy seeing that on our blogs now.
Indeed. So that's a look at this week's medical headlines from Johns Hopkins. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Rick Lang. Y'all live well.